This is the fourth installment of The Stories of Forgotten Women. This installment will describe the plight for women for suffrage and to be involved in the sciences. Enjoy Hertha Artin, A Kindling Fire. Every roaring fire begins as a mewing ember. This particular mewing ember was born as Phoebe Sarah Marks on April 28, 1854. At the age of 7, little Phoebe watched her father die and her family life disrupted. 2 years later, she was sent away to live with her aunt, an author and London school owner by the name of Marian Moss Hartog. As a teenager, Phoebe changed her first name to Hertha, a German earth goddess of Algernon Swinburne's poem Hertha, which was penned in 1869. She also renounced Judaism and became agnostic, distancing herself from her culture and religion. In 1786, Hertha Marks attended Girton College at the University of Cambridge. There, she studied mathematics and gained the friendships of Barbara Bodichon and George Eliot. Barbara Bodichon was a co-founder of Girton College, and George Eliot was a writer who was inspired by Hertha and based the character Mira Cohen in her 1876 novel Daniel Deronda off of her. Unfortunately, due to blatant misogyny, Cambridge did not give degrees to women despite enrolling them into university. Despite this, Hertha completed her education by passing the examinations in 1881. She became a teacher of mathematics in London high schools. It was beginning to become clear that Hertha's mewing ember had grown into a kindling flame. Like the energy in Hertha's heart, she discovered and grew an awareness about the energy around her. In 1884, Hertha Marks attended classes about electricity at Finsbury Technical College, and a spark of electricity occurred. No, this is not a literal electric spark, but this certain spark happened in the hearts. It was love. This spark was shared with William Artin, an electrical engineer who was teaching the classes. They were married a year later. While Hertha taught at women's seminars about electricity in 1888, she did not involve herself fully into science until 1891. While William was attending a meeting about electricity in Chicago in 1893, Hertha continued her husband's studies with the electric arc, a study that resulted in a lighting source for lamps. To go into detail, electric arcs were known to hiss and sputter before eventually stabilizing and delivering a consistent light. Hertha found the origin of the hissing in the oxidation of the positive carbon electrode, and so she proposed to change the shape of the carbon electrodes. This find greatly reduced the period of hissing and made the lamp lights more consistent. The year of 1899 was a historic year for women. Hertha Artin became the first woman to read her paper of electric findings before the Institution of Engineers, and she became the first woman member. In that same year, she demonstrated her arc experiments at a public event sponsored by the Royal Society, known as the Cobergzuerin. In 1901, William was recovering from exhaustion at the seaside town of Margate. During this, Hertha began to delve into experiments surrounding hydrodynamics. Something about the patterns formed by ripples in the sand intrigued her to conduct her own experiments. In 1902, due to her groundbreaking contributions to the scientific community, Hertha was nominated to be part of the Royal Society. Now, the Royal Society is the oldest national scientific society in the world, and it has been the leading beacon in promoting science. To be nominated is seen as an honor. Alas, sexism and misogyny got in the way. Lawyers persuaded the Royal Society that they should not accept married women, and Hertha was a married woman. Despite unjust rejection, Hertha's kindling flame continued to grow. 2 years later, feeling a tad guilty, the Royal Society invited Hertha to read her scientific paper, The Origin and Growth of Ripple Mark, before them. She became the first woman to do so. Then, in 1906, the Royal Society awarded her the Hughes Medal. This particular medal is awarded to people whose scientific endeavors were distinguishable in the physical sciences. Hertha's arc and sand ripple experiments gained the title of distinguishable in the physical sciences, and so the medal was given to her. Hertha's mewing ember had grown into a kindling flame, which now became a roaring fire. She became active in the suffrage movement, joining the Women's Social and Political Union in 1907. Becoming one of the organization's top contributors, the woman in some year donated more than £1,000. Not only was she a donator, Hertha, like her name, became a welcoming and warm fire for suffragettes. She opened up her home to suffragettes recovering from hunger strikes. In 1912, Artin received £7,000 from the organization to stall the government from seizing the accounts. Fun fact, Hertha Artin and Marie Curie were best friends, and after a kidney operation, Marie stayed with Hertha while recovering. A flame can last for only so long. Hertha Artin died on August 26, 1923. Though not even death could put out her consuming flames, for she has inspired young women to go into the sciences and let their minds be heard. Science has been a male-dominated field, and it has only been recently that women scientists have been gaining the recognition and awards that they deserve. Women who have been long dead are now being celebrated, something that seems to be too little too late. It was thought, and still thought to an extent, that men were more intelligent than women when it came to scientific endeavors. Even when they did have a woman make a contribution, the men took the credit. Hertha Artin was one of the first women to take credit for their own work, and Hertha definitely faced the chance that her husband could get the credit for her experiments and research. Government plays a key role in scientific research when it comes to funding. For example, NASA would not be NASA without funding from the government. Science would not be the science we know and love if it wasn't for government funding. If a scientist or a group of scientists wanted to research something, they would have to get the grants from government organizations that would support them. Yes, independent scientists existed in the beginning, but now you have to have a lot of money and up-to-date equipment. This is why Hertha was not admitted into the Royal Society. The government did not think having a woman scientist in their midst would do well. After all, supposedly the men are better scientists. If women wanted to do their own expensive scientific research, they had to go to societies tied to the government for money. But unfortunately, they were laughed at and turned away. This led to women doing independent research, and in the long run, they received their much-deserved recognition. This can be compared to a country's civil society, because science is a part of civil society. Schools encourage children to delve into STEM. My elementary school memories are nothing but seeing STEM posters on the walls and hearing how everyone should go into STEM. Science should not be exclusionary. Anyone who wants to be a part of science should be able to have the proper education and opportunities in their chosen field. Unfortunately, for women, that is not always the case. While there is a massive push for women to go into the sciences, there is a counter-push driven by sexist traditions. Men have always been in science, so why should science change to incorporate women? One thing that is right about humanity is that we have a very hard time accepting change, whether it be good or bad. Not only is science a part of civil society, the suffrage movement is a key factor in civil society as well. I mean, that should go without question, right? Right? Well, when it came to women's suffrage, no. Women actively participating in civil society were looked down upon. It was the norm for them to be shut up in the kitchen serving their husband's hand and foot. When women began to rebel against that norm and wrote themselves into the narrative, it turned the world upside down, as what should happen when certain groups of people are excluded from civil society. For some odd reason, when a marginalized group reacts to not being included in civil society, the rest of society seems taken aback, like they didn't see that coming. It should be expected that people will be upset if they are restricted from participating in their country's society, whether it be voting or going into science. Civil society is what makes a person feel like they are part of their country, and it should make them proud to be a citizen of that country. In conclusion, civil society is not something that should be taken for granted or taken away. People use civil society to be a part of their communities and be a voice to the government. Voting and education are essential parts of civil society, and if one group of people are lacking, then the country has failed its people. For what is a country without civil society? What is a government if it ostracizes certain people from voting? If something is not for everyone, then it is worthless. Civil society, in all of its parts, are supposed to be inclusionary, for that is what a society is supposed to be. People should not take advantage of civil society, for there are many countries around the world that are without it. If you take advantage of anything, you are blinded from why it matters that you have it. Civil society is something to be cherished, for it is essential to a true democracy. Democracy is no longer true when civil society is taken away from some people or all people. It is important that we remember to hold our liberties near and dear to our hearts, especially if you're a woman. Women in many countries barely have any rights, especially the right to vote or participate in science without a man looking over her shoulder and stealing her credit. Again, if civil society is restricted, then it is for no one. Thank you for listening to this installment of The Stories of Forgotten Women. Citations include Hertha Marks Artin from Britannica and Royal Society, also from Britannica. Again, thank you very much.